Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Going North Bank Stocks and Jacks. Now, Tamale just met one on the board. SP Futures up 4. NASDAQ Futures down 75 cents. Dow Futures up 80. Very strange day yesterday. We'll see if we get more of it today. Even though we ended up up on the day, I would say it was a day that would make you a little nervous about the market fabric right here. But we will talk. We will talk to the experts today, and we'll find out what they think. Speaking of an expert, Brendan Cronin. Brendan, how are you, buddy?
I'm fine this morning, Chief. How are you doing?
I don't know. You feel like an expert? You're going to explain the market to us?
Well, I think I'm an expert on some things, but I don't know if I am an expert on everything. I'm probably not.
Now, if you were the professor in Gilligan's Island, you would have to be the expert on everything because you're the only professor there.
Well, that's right. But, you know, people don't always listen to science, so.
Especially when every scientist is a celebrity scientist and they all say different things.
That's right. But, you know, the professor on Gilligan's Island had a wide range of knowledge. He was one of these guys that knew a lot of stuff. Even more than, because we don't know what he really was a professor of.
He was just a professor.
Yeah.
Well, if you're a lawyer, you're supposed to be a lawyer of everything. It's not like you only, you know, specialize in parking tickets. I mean, you're supposed to go to the Supreme Court. You're supposed to do everything.
Well, that's true, but you really don't want me in court because I have no courtroom experience. The only time I've been in a court is for my own divorce, and I didn't represent myself in that.
How'd that work out?
Okay. You know, I'm still hanging on. In fact, I got remarried, so it must have been okay.
Could you have done a better job?
I don't know. I probably would not have because of the emotional involvement. I wouldn't have been able to look at things as clear-eyed as my attorney did. And in many cases, she had to explain things to me and talk me off the ledge. So that's, you know, it's part of her expertise because she dealt with divorce and family laws. It was a major part of her practice.
I imagine you get specialized. I know doctors are getting increasingly specialized, but
radiologists talk about immunology, for example.
You kind of like the idea, though, the older general practitioner to kind of now you get the feeling if you walk in with a broken leg, you could have like leprosy, and the guy would notice it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good thing.
And I mean, there are a lot of lawyers who are general practitioners who have smaller practice areas, particularly in rural or smaller town areas, and they are a jack of all trades. Now, they may not be able to negotiate a sophisticated commercial lease for a space and some of the high finance stuff that you're involved in, but, you know, for family matters, for real estate closings, for family matters, for personal injury stuff, they can handle that just fine. They've got a breadth of knowledge.
We have all the politics going on with the COVID. We have the change in administration. What is your feel on the... one thing I will say about you attorney people is every single attorney picks up the Constitution and uses it as a sledgehammer to hit somebody else with. And everything that they're talking about is always constitutional. And the worst was Scalia, who I actually think was probably a very brilliant man. He's supposed to be very funny. I really like the guy. But the guy gave me the impression that he was like, really there when the guys wrote it or something. You know, that he had an inside track on what was in their mind, which of course he didn't. Now everybody who reads the thing about this impeachment, your buddy Romney, who I actually pretty much like, he's saying it's absolutely constitutional that you can essentially impeach a guy who's not there anymore. I am not a constitutional scholar, but I don't think the Constitution says that, does it?
there are a lot of things that the Constitution doesn't say explicitly that people think it says implicitly. It depends on how you're reading the words. The Constitution does not say that you can impeach somebody if they're in office only, or it doesn't say you can impeach people if they have resigned from office or have otherwise left office. That is not explicitly in the Constitution. There is precedent, however, for impeaching and trying public officials, not a president. Remember, we have a very unusual situation here with President, former President Trump, in this scenario. But there are examples of government officials who have been impeached and tried and turned out of office after they left office. It goes back to the 1860s, but there are cases where there are some cases where it has happened. Remember also, impeachment is not used very often. It's very rare. And not only presidents can be impeached, but other governmental officials in different departments can be impeached as well. As you know, there have only been four impeachments with three members of the presidency in, 250 years or so that we've been around.
They impeach a federal judge once in a while, right?
Yeah, they impeach judges. They impeach some other government officials from time to time, but yes. And it's particularly true in the case of a judge because they've got a lifetime tenure.
Well, my thing is I don't think we need to be wasting time on this. It's my shtick. And plus, I think that Trump has an awful lot of supporters, some of them close to me. I don't think the Democratic Party needs to do this. I mean, they didn't impeach Nixon after he resigned. They didn't impeach Spiro.
No, because he was pardoned by Gerald Ford.
If it moved as fast as this, the House would already. When did he pardon him? He didn't pardon him the next day.
No, it was about a month later, I think.
I'm saying if they moved as quick as they do now, they could have gotten one article over there. It didn't take long. They didn't impeach Spiro Agnew. He resigned because he was convicted on a state matter, correct?
Yeah, it was a state matter, I believe.
So they could easily
for fraud.
Yeah, so they could easily have, even though he was gone, they could have impeached him. They didn't. Right?
They could have, yes. Yeah.
I honestly think that where I'm getting to the question is one state and one's federal. All right, so I won't say my district, in Matt Weber's district, even though I'm in the same district, we had a state senator, I think his name was Smith, I'm not sure.
Derek Smith, are you talking about the guy in Illinois?
Yeah, well, we have this district, how can I say this politically correctly? It's designed for an African-American neighborhood, and then a finger of it reaches into the Ranch Triangle, which is not all white, but it's a higher income and, 85% white, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And as a way to essentially make our votes useless, because we don't own these people that live on Pulaski and Lake Street, basically. So we're the finger of this district, which you see in all these districts in Illinois. There's always an area where you want to go take a grab of, where you'll never give a campaign speech. They'll never come see you. They don't know who the hell you are. And we're that group, right? So they boot this guy, and evidently he runs again, like on a post. So in he goes. Well, in the state, once somebody comes back in by the will of the people, you can't kick the guy back out again for the same offense.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so if, for instance, and this is why I want to anticipate things not being that the Trump people decide this is just one more ridiculous thing the Democrats have done instead of just letting it go. I was against the Republicans forever, never letting Hillary go. Everything wrong in the world with the Republicans for a while was Hillary, even though she didn't, whatever. Now everything wrong with the world with the Democrats is because of Trump. Well, guess what? There was stuff wrong before either one of those people showed up. And, If somehow or another the Democrats totally bleep up this next 4 years and there's a groundswell of people that want Trump back in, which I can't imagine and sure as hell doesn't happen, hope doesn't happen, you mean to tell me now that these guys are going to say he can't run again because of this thing that is very wobbly constitutionally at best? But you're going to tell 70 million people you can't run your guy?
if nothing happens, if your advocacy happens, and by the way, I thought it was very interesting that the us and them situation you're posing is you versus Maddie in your district, but that's
when I talk about people that are crummy guys in our district, I always refer to it his district. If they're good guys, it's my district.
I know, it's us versus them, and
yes,
it carries over in many other conversations. But in this situation, if no action is taken against Donald Trump, he could run again in 2024. If action is taken and the Senate acquits him, he can still run again in 2024 as president. If he is tried and found guilty, then the Senate can take a second vote, which requires only a majority, not a two-thirds majority of the Senate, to bar him from ever holding another federal office, another federal elected office. So what you're raising is a very good argument about, you know, who's going to decide in 2024 if Trump can become president again. Is it through another electoral system where he runs for the presidency in the primary or sets up a third party and runs in 2024? Or are his actions so egregious that he should be barred from ever holding public office?
My point is, let's say these guys bar him. And now the dude runs in the first primary in Iowa. God, I can't even imagine this happening. He wins in a landslide. You're gonna tell these people he can't run to just vote for him?
If it gets to the point where the Senate convicts him and turns and says he can no longer run for office, he can no longer run for office. Even if he were to run in Iowa in 2024 and get 100% of the vote in the primary, he could not run for office under the Constitution.
If you want to rip the fabric of this society out from the core, that's just what you'd want to do. Why would you ever do that? I don't want the guy in. You know that. But that's insane. If everybody starts voting for him and he can't get back in.
Like I said, I don't care about this topic either way, but what are you talking about? If you went against the law, how would that be ripping the... Following the law does not rip the fabric of society out.
To those people,
he is a law and order candidate, so why wouldn't he follow the law that says he has been... In effect, if the Senate votes to convict him, he is convicted of the crime of high crimes and misdemeanor in the office. The penalty for that is not sending him to jail. The penalty for that is saying he cannot run for office.
All right.
I would say breaking the law could rip the fabric of society out, not following the law.
This conversation by saying whether or not it's even constitutional to boot a guy out who's not even there anymore is very wobbly.
Brendan is saying I would say that
there are people on both sides of that argument, legal scholars, and that's a question that may ultimately get to the Supreme Court. Another question to get to the Supreme Court that we don't know the answer to yet is what happens if Trump has self-pardoned himself or his family members, because he does not have to acknowledge in public all the people he has pardoned, even though he had a list of 140-something people that last night he was in office. We don't know if there were people that he did not disclose.
Okay,
the only way that he would know if he issued a pardon to Rudy Giuliani or Ivanka or Don Jr. or even himself would be if a federal crime is alleged against him and filed, and his defense team raises a defense that, oh no, you can't charge us because we have a pardon from the President of the United States.
Where does somebody file a secret pardon?
He just doesn't disclose it. There's no rule that says he has to acknowledge all the pardons that he is granted.
Well, somebody has to know, or else
he knows. He knows who he's pardoned.
It's not like you go to the
court building and say, "Give me a copy of all the pardons." They're not filed anywhere. They're given to the people who have a pardon, and then they can raise that defense if they're charged.
So he would give a letter to Giuliani.
Yeah, he could have issued a pardon. I mean, you've seen him sign the big pardons and acknowledge the big pardons. Like the woman, the friend of Kim Kardashian, who was in jail for many years for drug charges.
Right.
There was a big ceremony that he signed the pardon, presented it in a big ceremony, and made a big deal out of it. But that doesn't happen in all cases.
But there's got to be a piece of paper somewhere. Somebody's got to have it.
Right. But we don't know who that is.
Right. So
he is not required. He is not required to say, "Chief, here's a list of everybody that I pardoned, and there's nobody that is not on this list that I have not pardoned."
So let's say, for instance, you're on the list.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have, or your attorney, you've got to have a piece of paper. They can't just copy
your right. But if I don't broadcast it, if I don't go on your show and say Donald Trump gave me a pardon, here it is, then you won't know.
Well, if they're going to let you out of jail, you got to let the jailer know.
Okay. If I'm in jail and I get a pardon, that's a situation. In the case of somebody like Donald Trump for crimes that he's not yet been alleged or charged with, you don't know. There's a distinction here between somebody who's pardoned and are serving in jail or whose sentence has been commuted. Somebody, for example, like Vlad Blagojevich, his sentence was commuted. So you obviously know that something happened because he was released from jail 7 years early. If somebody like Rudy Giuliani or Don Trump Jr. or even himself who has not yet been charged with a federal crime, remember, the purpose of a pardon is twofold. One, it's an exoneration for actions that have been done in the past, but it also is a form of defense. When he issues it, if he issues it for his family or for somebody else or himself, you wouldn't know that unless a crime was charged against him. Right now, if you had committed a crime or allegedly committed a crime, you could hold on to that pardon and not disclose it to the world. If I, as a federal prosecutor, come in and say, "Chief, you did this, we're charging you with a federal crime," you can say, "Oh, no, here's a pardon." But until that point, and that's a form of defense that you would raise to have the charges dropped. But until that time, there's no need for you to disclose. You're free to disclose it, but you don't have to disclose it.
Here's a really
stupid... If you're holding that close to the vest, no one's going to know that you got that pardon.
Here's a really stupid question, almost to the point where why am I even asking it? How many secret pardons do you think have ever been given?
Who knows?
Well, obviously. I understood that when I asked the question, but, I mean, you would think word would get out on some of this stuff. I mean, if it was like hundreds, somebody somewhere would write, "Oh, by the way, here's 140 that are public, and there might be all kinds of others that aren't public." But I've never read that anywhere. Doesn't mean it's not true. I mean, I believe you, but let's just say it's... Did you know that, Maddie? I didn't.
I did not, no.
What percentage of the world do you think knows that?
I mean, very few. But I mean, remember, when they issue these pardons, a lot of times when they're going out of office, they disclose who they are because it makes them look more beneficent. It helps their supporters, and it certainly helps the families and the individuals who have been pardoned. But there's no requirement that pardon be disclosed to the general public.
Well, if somebody's already been charged, it pretty much has to be disclosed because the guy was going to get off.
Yes. But what you're talking about with the scenario that we were positing with a pardon that goes to, I mean, some of the ones who have been speculated are people like Rudy Giuliani, the Trump children, and Trump himself.
Well,
but
to get back to my earlier...
Because they've not yet been charged with a federal crime, you don't know whether that's been done or not. It's purely speculation to think whether they have or not, but they don't have to disclose that they never have to disclose it if they don't want to, but if they're charged with a federal crime, they can raise that as an issue.
Well, when you say, you and Maddie, when you say somebody can't run again, all right, so let's say, for instance, him not running again part comes down to 50-50 with Kamala Harris wigging the 51 vote on something that is debatable to start with. And all of a sudden the guy starts, and again I hope, he starts knocking off primary after primary. That's going to suck. I'm just saying. Now do you mean he can't be on the Iowa primary? He can't be on any ballot anywhere, or he can't be on the national ballot, or if he's on the ballot... He gets written in, he just can't serve. I mean, I don't. Where does it? Where
he cannot
does it
be. He cannot be elected and serve in a federal office if the Senate convicts him and bars him from holding office again.
Right. So he cannot be on the Iowa ballot.
Chief, it's the same example as in many states. You cannot vote or you cannot hold office if you're a convicted felon.
Okay.
In some states, it is a case where if it's a certain type of a felony, you are barred. Other times you can run again after a period of time. State laws are different.
By the way, that is...
If you're in a state where you've been convicted of a felony and you're barred from office, You cannot serve, even if you were elected in that office.
Well, you know, the that has changed on the for traitors, by the way. When I started, it was a property crime, that type of felony. And the joke was, if you stole $50, you couldn't be a traitor, but if you killed somebody, you could, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess was technically true. And now, somewhere in the past several years, they've changed it to any felony whatsoever. So if you, you know, thank God you wouldn't have, if you had a felony DUI or something, all of a sudden you can't trade. And I never could quite get the connection there.
Well, you're right. In some cases, the logic of some of these is that, take the one you just mentioned. There might be a very good reason why you would prohibit somebody from an embezzlement charge, an embezzlement felony, from being a trader, because you're dealing with other people's money and the trading debts, as opposed to somebody who, you know, gets drunk and kills somebody in a car, the felony manslaughter with the vehicle. Because it doesn't go to his, it doesn't go to how honest he is in the sense of trading for money. So there's a reason for distinguishing those. And some states have done that. Other states have not. A felony is a felony.
What about the guys that are in, like, the office football pool and a couple guys never contribute near the end? Oh, is that a...
Well, I would say that we don't put them in the pool anymore.
Well, can they trade? I'd say no.
Is that a felony? I don't know.
It should be.
Is that within, look, you always have to look at the rules that are set up for the circumstance. You can't apply the same rules to the impeachment of the former president or the current president to a trader.
Well, I started the conversation.
The rules are going to be different for different reasons.
Why is there such an inconsistency between the state and the federal government? In the state you can run again, in the federal you can't.
Because of the idea of federalism. And this is a Republican tenet, that every state is sacrosanct within the confines of its own state. Similarly, in Illinois, for example, there are home rule units, Chicago and any city that's, any town that is more than, I think it's 10 or 15,000, is automatically a home rule unit. They are like a mini state legislature within the confines of their city limits. In this example, all 50 states have rights that are given to them under the Constitution to make the laws and rules. That's why election laws are different in every state. That's why criminal laws are different in every state. And what may be okay in Illinois is not okay in Wisconsin or Michigan or Indiana.
Is there
or
some,
vice versa.
It appears that there's
and
some...
This is a tenet of one of the strongest suits of the Republican Party, is they believe in states' rights, that every state has their own rights. The federal system is overlaid and goes across the entire country. And one of the reasons for that is that you want some things to be uniform. Air travel, for example, a lot of the air travel rules are national, done by the federal government, because it is so important. You wouldn't want one set of rules in California and another one in Nevada and another one in Arizona, because they're contiguous states and it would be too confusing.
Well, that's a... I don't know where I come down on that side of that argument, but anyway, it's a.
If you don't come down on that side of the argument, what you're espousing is that the federal law should be imposed across the entire country on every matter, which is exactly what a lot of folks were arguing against in the past election in the past 4 years.
I would say that there should be consistency. Not in who you. I don't care less how you elect your mayor in North Dakota, but I think there should be consistency in the federal election laws, because you're electing somebody federally.
And there's validity to that argument. A lot of people will agree with you that it should be uniform across the entire country. Others will say no. Every state has the right to have their own election laws.
Well, if all you have to do, this happened to me. Once in a while, I had the John Belushi moment. Fortunately, the nun wasn't whacking me with the ruler and sent me down the stairs, but I was in New York.
Oh, I thought you meant it was fun. The Germans were invading Pearl Harbor.
He's on a roll. Don't let him go. I got to go to a World Series game, right, in New York, and I flew from New York to San Francisco, which is one hell of a flight, by the way. It's like going to Europe. You're going against the wind the whole way. It's like 6.5 hours. It's a long way. And anyway, and I was sitting there, and all of a sudden I was reading something, and it had to do with states' rights. And I look at them, we're flying across the country, and I go, okay, I look out to the left side, you know, marijuana is lifetime imprisonment. And on the other side, it's a misdemeanor. I'm going, we're out of our friggin' mind. I mean, the place is pretty small for it to have 50 different rules.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on how you look at it. If you never leave Illinois or Chicago or Alabama, I guess it sounds good to have states' rights. But if you look at the place, I mean, it gets smaller by the day, it seems, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like I said, one thing's for sure is federal election laws. You can't have people being banned in one state, and the other state they're bussing people to the polls. I mean, that seems a lot to me. What do you think of the market going crazy? We only got a minute here. What did you think of this GameStop yesterday? Stock was $76, trades 159, then goes down on the day, and then finishes up $10.
I'd start looking for some communications between people and some insider trading on something there.
When you talk about rich people running the country in the tax law, how come nobody mentions, Brendan, the piggyback move up when you give your kids stock, or if you bought it for $2? Why, out of all the things, out of all the taxes in this country that are not paid, I'm going to say that's probably the biggest piece right there.
That's why tax lawyers and specialized accountants who deal with income tax matters make a lot of money.
Why don't we become lobbyists?
You can. There's nothing stopping you from being a lobbyist.
I'll be one of your guys. Be Brendan lobbying, and Maddie and I will be your guys.
Yeah. There are a number of people who leave a government office and become lobbyists.
Well, that would be you.
Not only elected officials, but people who are at different staff levels become lobbyists too.
Maddie would be a great lobbyist. I don't know if I'd be any good, but he'd be terrific.
I
he's personable. He's like the mayors of people.
Manny would be my guy.
Absolutely.
I would definitely go to Maddie as the guy.
Absolutely. I'd just be on the fringe. Nobody wants me in there. Anyway, S&P Futures up 3, NASDAQ Futures unchanged. Brendan, thank you. We'll be right back. Mr. Joel and Cannon.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature Protect and Index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Sharks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Melbourne on the board with Mr. Joel and Cannon. And again, I never give market advice. I never give anything in that regard. Everybody knows that. But I will say this morning. Be careful. Maddie, your best buddy, you know, Elon Musk tweets this morning. He likes Etsy. Stock is up 10%.
Well, yeah. He's one of the most influential people in the world.
Somebody starts buying it, Momentum Traders, it jumps in. Stock's trading, what, 220 now? Eh, I just, this all reminds me of 2000. I can't even go there. S&P futures up 2.25, NASDAQ futures down 1.25, Dow futures up 67. Notable stocks in the Dow, we got Boeing up $1.94. 3M, which had earnings up $1.41. Johnson & Johnson, which had earnings up $3.50. So those are the ones that are up in the, now Microsoft, of course, goes up every day, 143. So that's, so the Dow is up over in Europe. These guys were down yesterday. Today, the DAX up 257, 1.9%. FTSE up 53.8%. CAC around up 71, 1.3%. So the markets all over the place are becoming a lot wilder here. We're talking about that with Joel Nelbrin over in Asia. You got just the opposite. Nikkei down 267, that's 1%. Shanghai down 54, that's 1.5%. Hang Seng, which was up pretty huge the other day, is down 767, which is 2.5%. So they've been, 2% is a lot in Hang Seng for sure. Yesterday, just how we ended, Dow was down 36, S&P was up 13, NASDAQ up 92. Bonds today are up one basis point to 105, the Bund minus 0.53, Japan plus 0.03, where they've been forever. Oil up 28 cents, 53.05. Brent up 25 cents, 56.13. Natural gas up 4 cents, 2.64. RBOB up 2 cents, 1.58. Gold down 89 cents, so call that flat. Silver up 0.6 of a cent, so call that flat. Copper down a penny, so not much going on in the metals markets. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a few crashes to report already due to last night's snowfall. The outbound Kennedy at Montrose, there's a crash blocking the left lane. That's causing some delays if you're heading out toward O'Hare. No issues on the inbound side, just slower than normal travel times for this time of morning. Eisenhower is looking okay, but further west out on the Reagan Memorial on the outbound side, there is an issue at Kingery Highway. That has the exit ramp blocked and is causing delays on the outbound Reagan out in the western suburbs. And then down south, we have a crash on the Ryan, blocking the two right lanes, the local lanes, on the outbound Ryan at 47th Street. So crews are on the scene looking to get that cleared up. Off the expressways, there's all kinds of little spin-outs and issues due to the weather. Route 53 on the southbound side at Rand Road up in the northern suburbs is a big one. Also, North Avenue at Westwood Avenue out in the western burbs is another crash. So give yourself plenty of time if you're heading out this morning. Weather today, the winter weather advisory continues until 5 p.m. tonight. So it began yesterday around 5 p.m. and it's going to last for 24 hours. We're expecting another 2 to 5 inches depending upon where you are in the area. A little bit worse up north, and then city central, maybe just another dusting or 1 to 2 inches. It looks like we got about 3 inches in the city overnight.
Where's the 8?
Well, if we got 2 to 5 more coming, that would tell you that. I doubt we're going to get to 8, but we could easily get to 5, which is kind of what they thought, between 5 and 8 inches. So we'll see how that plays out. But that winter weather advisory lasts until 5 p.m. tonight, so that will certainly affect your commute this morning, but could also affect your commute on the way home if you're heading into downtown. We'll reach a high of 33 degrees today with snow on and off. Right now it's overcast and 30 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 52. Right now it's overcast and 43.
In sports, the Bulls got off to a bad start last night and never really recovered. They fell to the Celtics 119-103. The Bulls have now lost two in a row after their modest three-game winning streak. College Hoops, Loyola played Bradley for the second straight day and beat them for the second straight day, winning 65-58 down in Peoria. Arizona, with a sweep over Arizona State, they beat the Sun Devils 80-67 last night. Chief.
After publishing the schedule and all that stuff, and everybody saying they're going to start with spring training, I got an email from one of our listeners in Arizona saying that there's movement afoot to cancel it again.
Really?
Crazy stuff. Joel, how are you?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing on this Tuesday morning?
I'm sort of surprised that you're on the show this morning. I know, but you are Steady Eddie, I know. After buying GME at 76, selling twice as much at 176, and buying it back at 76, I thought you'd be retired.
Full disclosure, small, very small long position in it. Just something from a while ago, nothing to retire on, but I heard you in the when you were coming on, and very interesting times in the markets. It was I will reflect on this time period, and there's going to be a lot of winners and a lot of losers, and right now it's a momentum driven market. Almost impossible to be short the market depending on circumstances, but really, this is nothing new to me, Chief. I mean, there's been bucket shops, there's been penny stocks. I just think what you're seeing now is just through the internet and the ease of communication, you're seeing a huge magnification of it. And it's gonna go until it stops.
Well, it
no one knows when that is. I don't know if that's any profound statement, but it is what it is, and
I agree.
The market will absorb it.
I don't know about that. I think the fabric of the market, the amount of people involved, are less than there ever have been. We've given the market over to Citadel and a few other people. You don't have 1,000 people trading stuff like you used to.
This is something we could debate for quite a while.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of people trading. There's a lot of retail investors in here.
I think you're dead wrong on that.
Yeah.
I'm talking about
moving stocks.
There's more people trading than ever.
The hedge funds are the ones that are getting run over. You see Melvin Capital Management just got bailed out. So
I was speaking as
participation in the market, Chief. I disagree with you on that.
I was speaking of professional. It's not the same as the specialist in New York with a deep book. It's something comes on like the Musk story this morning where he likes Etsy. There's no selling book anywhere. There isn't a specialist. Not that a specialist would stand in the way of it. There's a whole bunch of people, when it starts to go up, are piling in their momentum traders. I mean, on the retail side, I agree with you. It's probably more people doing that kind of stuff, especially in a place like Robinhood, letting you do 5 shares and stuff. I mean, I think there's way more people that are, I mean, it's probably like 1929, for God's sake, in that regard. But what I'm saying is they put these stocks out there, and it's not like there's 25 firms making a market in them. You know what I'm saying?
That is correct.
That's what I misspoke. And again, that is an example, as I try to mention to people, I don't want to get into politics here, but I'm going, people who defend Trump's speech in Washington and say, if you read the speech, he didn't, I said, it's not what you say, it's what people hear. Now, I intended to say there were less people making markets than before, but that's not what you guys heard, correct? I made a mistake, and it was heard as there's less traders, when obviously there's more traders, right? And I never intended to say that. What I meant was there's the fabric of the market that whose job it is to make fair and orderly markets, and a place where people will put offers and bids is not the same as it used to be. Is that fair?
There's no affirmative obligations.
Right.
It's all electronic market makers, right? And digital, programs. And when something happens in a stock like Etsy today, they can either A, shut it down, and say, hey, we're not going to make a market in this. or they can join the fray and go along with the momentum on the upside. So that's just the way it is. But there's not affirmative obligations in the market to post a two-sided market. And the reason is because it was no longer profitable for the firms to do it. You're going to get a lot of people that will argue too, Chief, that these market makers for a long time took advantage of the investing public, that, you know, and, you know, so the pendulum swings both ways. And right now, it swung heavily in favor of, you know, the momentum, the retail investors and the hedge funds that are going along with it and the market makers. Well, the digital market makers. So, interesting time, Chief. I don't know what else I can tell you.
Two questions. One is a theoretical one, and the other one I want to talk about an individual stock yesterday, which I stunned me more than the GME. I think a lot of what happens in these stocks that are that run up and down are kind of crazed, at least in terms of price. I mean, you see a stock double and finish, then go down on the day. I mean, that's not exactly a fair and orderly market that I would. But we continue to list stocks that you can't short. I think any stock that you can't short has a danger of having a problem because you can't sell puts to people, right? Because you can't short the stock. So I think any stock that you can't short is somewhat of a danger.
And I will going based on the efficient market hypothesis, you're 100% correct.
The other thing is, we only have a minute. Did you see this BBBY yesterday? Stock's up $6. Now we're talking about a retail. I mean, I'm sure they do stuff online, but they're a retail place after earnings, Joel. Not that the stock was up $6. That's fine. The volatility in this week's options was 400 after earnings. I've never seen that. The volatility, implied volatility, usually goes down after earnings because the news is out. This went up.
Chief, you just have to tell. I mean, what has high short interest, and that is just a good old fashioned, short squeeze.
Yeah,
that's been going on for a long time. Investors that had been in this stock from July of 2016, where had an opportunity to get bailed out yesterday, and who knows if it's even going to go back to that level. But yeah, that thing almost hit $48 and closed on the low. So yeah, I did. That was an amazing move, and it's good if you're buying it on the way up, but just make sure you sell it on the way up too.
Well, that's right.
The other thing with these stocks too, if you're trading, on a shorter term basis, is the halts, and that's something that, can be dangerous, right? When Kodak had that run up. So that's the only thing I caution people when you're trading these stocks, it could be good. You're buying the stock, it's going up and up and up and up, and it gets halted and it opens higher. On the other hand, if it turns on you and get halted. So, if that's a risk that you're willing to assume, then go get them, man, if you're good at it. So that's my comments on BBBY. Anything with that? Did you see iRobot?
Yeah, a little bit. I was watching the BBBY because I was trying to put a position on there with the option. I'm like,
and they were running from you, right?
Well, I was trying to, don't do this at home. I was trying to do a covered straddle right, but I just said, this thing's too pricey for me. And it was bizarre. Like the twenty puts like 2 weeks out were like, they were higher than they were the day before, even though the stock was up. It was crazy.
It's crazy, Chief. But I got to hop.
All right, take care, buddy.
For my show. Good luck to everybody out there. We did discuss about Michigan getting shut down for 2 weeks.
Basketball?
But anyways, we'll talk next week, Chief. We'll be here. The markets will be here. Just, keep up the good work, you and Matty Ice.
Why are, okay, Matty, I have a question for you since Joel's going. Why are they still shutting people down for 2 weeks when the CDC is saying 10 days is good now?
I don't know. That's a good question. It's a conference by conference thing, and the Big Ten is 17 days, I believe, for a player to test positive that they have to quarantine. And then if multiple guys test positive and it starts to spread within your program, whether it's coaches or players or both, then you pause everything for 2 weeks and reevaluate.
I think it probably makes some sense that even if it's 10 days, you probably don't want somebody going through that kind of exertion the next day. But people, you know, I don't know. But I mean, I think that's the theory.
It's spreading like wildfire through the Big Ten again, basketball-wise. Michigan State's been on a pause. Penn State was on a pause. They came back. Nebraska's on a pause. And now Michigan is shutting down all activities across their whole athletic department, I believe, not just men's basketball.
So how come living in a bubble and everybody wearing masks works pretty well, huh?
Well, they're not in a bubble. I mean, it's impossible to be in a bubble unless you're actually in a bubble, like the NBA was. So, you know, they're trying to isolate as much as they can, but you're trying to keep college kids away from seeing their girlfriends and their family and going to...
I don't think any schools are back in session
yet. Any of those things. Well, they're on campus.
But the Irish aren't back.
I'm talking about the players.
Yeah, but I'm saying... So, I think they're the only people there.
Well, I mean, I doubt that. I don't think everyone's on campus. I mean, most people probably aren't on campus. You're right. But to assume that they have nowhere to go and nowhere to no one to see, I would say is probably not true.
I would agree. But
so you're not in a bubble. I mean, you're trying your best to stay isolated the best you can. You're wearing masks, but you're still traveling across the country, and you're still asking college kids to not do anything when they go back to the dorm.
I don't disagree. But I mean, drive by Northwestern tonight, today, and you'll wonder how you can find somebody to infect. There's nobody there.
Yeah, there's no doubt that unless you're in a lab. Or you're an athlete, you're not on campus. Like, you walk around DePaul, the only people you see there are, like, the basketball players.
How after all this time, hasn't everybody already had it?
Well, I've explained this to you multiple times, but in Michigan State, these are guys testing positive for the second time that all had it in the summer. I don't know if that's the case for some of the other schools, but it's clear that if you had it and 6 months go by or 8 months go by, you can test positive again.
Well, it's not clear to anybody other than you, it appears. You can test positive, yeah, but...
Well, that's all they're going off is testing positive. True. None of these guys are sick. I mean, I shouldn't say none of them. Some of them are, but for the most part, none of them have symptoms or significant symptoms. But they're testing positive, and, you know...
I have a medical question that you can't answer, and I can't either. I just talked to my nephew last night, and he went and got tested. Why are they still using that ridiculous up-your-nose test that Carl and everybody else says can pick up stuff along the way that you're not even sick? When I had mine, it was a throat thing. Didn't hurt. It took like half a second. Why didn't we just using that?
I don't know. I've been tested twice, and both times I did the cheek swab thing that you do yourself. And that was obviously painless and easy. But from what I've read, and I don't know, you never know, as this has developed over the last 10 months, you know, the things change as we learn more, and so you never know what's outdated and what's current. But I always thought the nose test was by far the most accurate. Are you saying that's not the case? Because I don't know. I've never had the nose test personally.
What happens is if say you already had it or whatever, if you walk through a bar or a restaurant, not given or any place, a classroom, and there's some, quote, in the air, they're so sensitive that you can get some particles essentially on your nose hair to be gross. And you're gonna test positive, even though it may not be enough viral load where either you're not sick, or if you had it before, you're not gonna get sick, but it's on you. It's in you. I mean, it's a,
sure.
I don't think
I assume that's a less than 1% scenario that you're describing.
Well, okay.
But it's possible, sure.
What does Carl say the false positives are? 3% or 2% or something?
I think false positives are higher than that.
Well, then.
I don't know what the number is, but I think false positives are pretty high, which is why, they don't even announce a test in, from what I've read with Big Ten coaches, basketball-wise, they won't even necessarily come forward with a positive test until they've tested positive multiple times in a row. Because the false positives are so high.
And I think that they're, and you know what they're doing now, I think in some of these states, there's, you know, again, I can't understand, I've read stuff from Carl, but there's degrees of, sensitivity on the test, and if you want to, you can lower the test sensitivity and end up with less people testing positive, and essentially say you're making progress and all you've done is change the test. I mean, you can ramp it up. I know when I tested positive, I talked to my doctor and he said they've got these tests so sensitive now it could be somebody has a COVID cold and it's tripping the test. He goes, we've got to the point where we got these things so sensitive now, we're tripping everybody positive. Now, that doesn't mean that somebody who tests positive doesn't have it at all, right? I mean, it surely doesn't mean that, but I mean, there's a lot going on here, and the thing that gets me is whenever somebody says, maybe not so much in the last 5 or 8 years, but before that, whenever some idiot, I use that term intentionally, would go before Congress, and you knew he was lying through the teeth, every other word would be quite frankly, to be frank, or don't quite frankly, and it was always like, and then I read some article study said when somebody says that 40% of the time they're lying or something. Now, in your day, which is now, whenever somebody starts telling me about how transparent they're going to be, the hair goes up on the back of my neck. Because if you're gonna tell the truth, just tell the truth.
Right. You don't have to tell me that you're telling the truth right. Before you tell the truth.
Right. I would say that, as you know, the listeners and other people send me all kinds of COVID stuff. Whatever harebrained idea you may have, and I'm not saying you ever do, I can probably dig through my crap here and find a scientific study that backs you, or some quasi scientific study that backs you. I don't think I've ever seen that before. If you can say whatever you want here. You can say, now Fauci today is talking about wearing 2 masks. If masks are so, I just said, if they are so good and you wear one, why do you need me to wear one if they work that well? I mean, I think I got mine when I was wearing a mask in a hospital, okay? The governor of New Jersey told, what's her name, Margaret Brennan. She's, why aren't you so big on masks? He goes, because I wore one all the time and I still got it. I mean, they're not that, do they help some? Probably. I don't know. But, I mean, the idea that, I mean, I was listening to these people from Mexico yesterday, and evidently what is he, the premier? He's not the premier. What is he, the main man in Mexico, whatever they call him. Is he the president or is he?
I think it's the president down there, El Presidente.
Okay, all right. So he tests positive for COVID, and some lady reporter just launches in that he's been not wearing a mask, this and that. And the idea was that he almost deserved it because he didn't wear a mask, and he probably gave it. But I've never once heard anybody say, God, Joe tested positive, and Joe followed all the rules. He even wore a mask at home, and he still got it. I mean, you never hear that. The question is why. The fact is, you can get it with a mask on, or not. Maybe.
Well, yeah, of course. Everyone knows that. It just decreases your chances. That's all. I mean, there's no silver bullet. Otherwise, we would have done
right,
it.
Right, but what I'm saying is,
I don't think anyone thinks.
But the mentality is, if every time you get it. The idea is to identify some guy you walk by or some lady who wasn't wearing a mask, and without any proof whatsoever, you say, I got it from that person because they weren't wearing a mask. Just like the stupid Democrats, I mean, there's stupid Democrats and Republicans, and Biden said the same thing where the people during the riot in Congress, or whatever you want to call it, invade, what is that thing? What the term would you be when everybody broke into Congress? A riot? I'd say a riot would work.
The insurrection, I've heard.
Whatever the hell it was. There's a guy who was wearing his mask, as he claims he was, his Democrat, got it, and he blames the 3 Republicans in the room that didn't wear a mask. He has no idea whether those people had it or not. Now, why would you say something like that? And then Biden picked
politically.
Up on it. Politically. Well, yeah, but I mean, we're starting to believe these people when they talk about stuff like that, even though we know they're politicians and they would lie to save. I mean, they throw a baby off a bridge for a vote, right?
Of course.
But why all of a sudden are we believing these people?
I don't.
But
it doesn't sound like you do either.
No.
So who's the we?
Well, I think a lot of people are.
I'm sure some people are, but I can't solve all the world's problems. I can only worry about.
I know. We're trying though.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm looking at. It appears to me that we have what, about 5% of the people vaccinated right now in the U.S. Does that sound accurate to you?
I thought it was, 5% would be 16 million. I don't think we're that high.
I think we're close to that. I mean, I think we're close to that. Usually the chart they show is by population. So for out of every 100 people, they're saying 5 have been vaccinated.
Well, that would be 5%.
So that would be 5%. So I don't know if that's, completely based off 330 million people, or if that's just 5% of the targeted group. I don't know. I'll have to do more research.
Manny, who was the person?
But my point is that we're talking. You know, you're talking earlier about spring training maybe getting pushed back, and you're talking about all this other stuff. Why aren't we just going full speed ahead to get to that 60% number? If that's the number we're trying to get to, we're not that far away. We should be able to get there in 90 days. Like, what are we doing? And then let's open back up.
What's
the problem?
We have half the people that have died, roughly 45%, have died from nursing homes. Every single person in nursing home should have been vaccinated by now.
I agree. And I don't know what percentage of them have been thus far, but
I would hope a lot.
I assume it is a lot, but it's I also assume it's not 100%, and it should be.
Well,
it should be 100%.
Well, isn't like 85% of the people who've died are over the age of 60?
I don't know the exact numbers, but that sounds right.
Well, I mean, let's get on with it. Plus, the study that I was reading everybody the other day from The Guardian, of all places, I mean, the only place I'm getting these real studies are these guys started tracking when the vaccines came out, which was essentially, what, 20 weeks ago, about?
Sure.
They've tracked people who have had the virus and have their own antibodies, people like me and Kenny and who knows, maybe some other people here we don't even know about. They've tracked the antibodies that you get yourself. Now, everybody's a little different, I'm sure. What kind of sample? Or the antibodies that you get from the vaccine, which essentially are the same thing, right? And they found out that people who have had the disease after 20 weeks, their antibodies are like 90% effective. Not everybody. Some people, they fade pretty quick. And the AstraZeneca vaccine is 90% effective. No, I'm sorry. The Pfizer vaccine is 90% effective. They're like a dead even. And the AstraZeneca is not near as good. It's like 80-83. Because that's in Britain. They're tracking the AstraZeneca, not the Moderna. So basically, if you count people that have already had it, Matty, and if you could, let's say Biden's talking about 100 million people in 100 days, well, I'm going to say I'll take the under on that. But let's say
I think we're on track for that.
A million people a day?
Yeah, I think we are.
Well, that would be nice. I'm going
to
say even. But
I think as of last week, we've begun vaccinating, or maybe the last 2 weeks, we've begun vaccinating about a million people a day.
Okay, so I'll be charitable then. Let's say
I told you, out of my group of 35 to 40 year olds that should not be vaccinated, of the 10 close friends I have, three of them have already been vaccinated, which is insane to me, but it's true.
Well, they were just happened to be a place where they had extra vaccines, right?
Well, one was a Chicago public school teacher who just went to Walgreens website and registered and got vaccinated, said it was painless. The other one is a healthcare provider, so of course she was one of the first people to get vaccinated, and then her husband on my basketball team, they had extras, and he got vaccinated.
I don't blame him at all for
that. And I assume that everyone's group has a couple of similar stories. My point is why are we fighting and worried about all this other BS? Let's just get it going until we get to the number we need to get to, and let's completely open up.
Well, I'm trying to help you in the sense that if the Guardian study is correct, how many people do you think have already had it? 50 million? Easy.
At least, yeah.
All right, so if you vaccinate another 75, you're up to a lot of people, right? I mean, we're up to a real lot of people. But under no circumstances is the politics here gotten to the point where if you either had it or you get vaccination, you're not supposed to do the same rules. I do it because I'm not as much of a rabble rouser as people think I am. Whenever I go to the health club, first thing I do is put the mask on, go in the building, blah, blah, blah. And I keep asking myself, what am I doing this for? I mean, why? Why am I doing this? I mean, I don't need to. But just to keep everybody else happy. But I at some point, I'm not going to want to do things just to keep other people happy. I just, you know. SP Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures down 775. Come back with Russell Rhodes. Man, I was just saying while you were talking to Russell that I do feel like an idiot going over to the health club and putting a mask on when I know I don't need to. I mean, at some point, I'm going to want to stop doing things just to make other people happy. It's not there yet. I'm willing to do it. But at some point, I'm going to say, screw you people. You know, it's just the way I am. We're not there. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Here, right now. Right
there, there's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 475, the NASDAQ futures down 650. Russell, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Doing all right. So you let the snow keep you home.
The snow is definitely keeping me home today. I don't have any reason to be down there today.
All right, well, that's...
I'm at school Monday, Wednesday, Friday, so there's no reason to...
How's that going? Are you got anybody in class or no?
Not yet, but February 1st, next Monday, we're actually going to do what they're referring to as hybrid, where about half my students are going to come to class, the other half are going to continue to dial in, and I was down there yesterday and did an audio-visual test, and they got this cool camera that they added to the classroom, and I'm like, man, this thing is awesome. I'm going to get one for home, and it's like a $2,000 camera. And then I looked real closely at it, and they had it, like, totally locked down to a cart, and then triple, you know, kind of like the way you really should lock up your bike downtown if you want to make sure all the parts are there after work.
So you couldn't steal it.
Like, man, this is cool, and that's how much it was. I'm like, well, maybe I could borrow it. No, I can't borrow it.
Well, how many bazillionaires are on? Do you see on national TV using a stupid camera out of their computer, and they look like absolute crap? I mean, you would think that those guys would at least pony up for a little bit of a camera.
Honestly, I don't. And this is really from working with a lot of old guys like myself who've been forced to teach from home. I don't think they even realized they could do something like that. They just don't understand the technology well enough to realize that you could attach a nicer camera to your computer. And also one of the ways they become really rich is by not ever spending money.
That's the truth. But you know, I've been accused of being the biggest Luddite on earth, but even I would know, God, I can't look like that. I can't look that crummy on TV. I got to do something. comb my hair or do something. Get a camera that works. I mean, if you whatever. Just say, hey, you're our expert. What is going on in the markets with the volatility and the stocks running all over the place? Has the marketplace become unglued?
Well, do you remember the 4 or 5 times that Yahoo traded at 400 and then crashed right back down in like 99?
Yep.
Yeah, you overlap that with GameStop, and it just feels the same, doesn't it?
But the individual stocks that are doing this now, I have a client. He's been a contributor to the show. He'll go nameless. Here's one that people don't even know. He bought, through us, he's a client. He bought a bunch of this, won't say how much, BlackBerry, which has been dead and buried now for how many years?
Oh, yeah.
And I think, I'm not sure. I know he did the trades for me, probably, but, you know, who knows. I'm going to say somewhere around $3. The thing has sat there at $3 for, we're talking years. I mean, it's not 20 years or anything, but it's a few. And all of a sudden I get a call. I don't watch it anymore. I get a call from the guy. He goes, hey, my stock's $10. What should we do? Should we sell it? And I said, tell you what, let's sell half of it. I said, the market is going crazy here. Once this stuff starts to move, it just keeps moving. He goes, but the company... I said, don't worry about what the company does. That has nothing to do with the world right now. I said, how about we sell half and we buy the $10 puts for the other half, just a week, just to see if it keeps going. He goes, that's a good idea. All right, so I think we sold, half, and we buy the puts on there. Of course, paying $1 for a $10 put
with a week to go is kind of a lot. But, you know, because obviously the thing, he just made a move. So we buy the thing, and sure enough, the next Friday, it's, you know, 1280 or something. So the put was a good buy. We pissed away a buck on the put, and we're up 280 on the stock. So he says, what do you want to do? Should we sell the rest? And I go, let's do one more week on the put. The whole market's going squirrely here on these stocks. So we pay another buck, like for the 1250 put, right?
Mm-hmm.
So again, which is kind of high, but I said, we're not going to do this forever. Because, you know, we start paying a dollar a week, we're going to piss away the whole $12 pretty fast. Let's do it one more week just to see. Sure enough, yesterday he calls me, the thing's 20 and a half. It's up seven times now in 10 days.
Yeah.
So guess what? He says, what do you think we should do? The 22 calls this week are $6.50. So we're able to sell
that's,
two.
That's practically a hedge to sell in the calls, or at least a partial hedge.
Yeah.
And I never say that about call options.
No, because, well, if you get away with it for like many months in a row, it starts to add up, you know, but the first week, you know, hey, if you buy XYZ at 100 and you sell the 101 calls for a dollar, all your risk is now 99 instead of 100. I mean, where does that get you?
Yeah,
right?
But I mean, you know, that's.
So we sold
like a buffer protection from just selling the call.
Yeah, so we end up getting twice the price of the stock 2 weeks ago with these calls with like a week to go. I'm like, this is insanity. But if you're in a position where you have the stock, now yesterday, I don't know if you watched, it was BBBY comes out with good earnings. And I was trying to find the story. There might be a story out there. If somebody has, please send it in. I'm thinking, after earnings, the stock's up $6. So it's up like 20%. All right, well, that, you know, that happens lately. This week's volatility is 425% after earnings. And I'm like, after earnings, normally implied volatility drops because the news you're anticipating is now out. Stock's up $6. The volatility, implied volatility should drop because it goes up before earnings, right? All of a sudden, the thing is sitting there. I'm going, if you wanted to do a covered straddle right in here, I mean, you could have done it out 2 weeks and sold like the 30 puts and the 37 calls for like $10. So if you had to buy the rest of the stock, you'd be buying it at like 20, which is $10 less than before the thing was before the earnings even came out. I mean, it's insanity.
No, yesterday when, you know, GameStop was doing its really screwy stuff, I saw where, you know, the stock was in the 90s and the March, I was like, well, you know, this thing's got to crash back down to reality. So I went to look to maybe buy a couple of months long, you know, a couple of, like the March puts, and the March 50 puts were trading at $10.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet they're, if you did the at the money puts, they had to be $50.
Oh yeah, it was just absolute ridiculousness. So, and
well, the worst. Were you around in 89 in the business?
I was I was in college and I was waiting tables at that time at a restaurant that was owned by a group of brokers, or a bar that was owned by a group of brokers. So, you know, they had CNBC in on there, and I was paying attention. I was paying a lot of attention. It was one of the things that got my interest in the market.
Was this the?
So I was not
the,
in the business. I was still in college, but I was watching the market. I was.
Was this known as the Cardigan Bar?
It was not the Cardigan Bar. So.
Everybody in there, all the waiters and waitresses, had to wear cardigans.
It was the Midway Cafe,
really?
Which is now a Taco Bell.
Really. I think the Midway Cafe was probably nicer than the Taco Bell. Just saying.
Well, unless it's a Taco Bell cantina.
It was the dregs of society.
Oh, really?
Let's put it this way: if the guys from Bucket Shop, or not Bucket, whatever, if the guys from any of those scumbag Wall Street type movies got together and opened up a bar, that's what it would have looked like, and that's the kind of guys that owned it.
So it was like the Intergalactic Bar in Star Wars.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
God.
Yeah.
Anyway, the United Airlines, out of all the implied volatility plays, I don't even know how you, I mean, you're the volatility, I don't even calculate it. Somebody allegedly was going to take the stock over at 300.
Mm-hmm.
And this was known as the mini crash. And, stock goes up, 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 and the week of was supposed to close on that Friday night, right? Expiration Friday of all things, because in those days expiration was only once a month. Actually, when I first started, there were only expirations once every 3 months, but they got to monthlies. So the thing is trade, you know, 265, 270, 275 as you get near Friday. Well, in the Tribune, which at the time used to be a real newspaper, every morning there would be some, because United Airlines obviously was a Chicago company, still is, although, I mean, I don't know if their headquarters still are here, but I think they are. So, there was a massive amount of holdings in the Chicago area, mutual funds in the area and things like that. Every morning, some serious mutual fund or hedge fund or somebody would say, we're bailing. We're not waiting until Friday. Just, this thing's not worth 280. I don't know who all these people are that are foolish enough to pay 300. So the thing gets to like, 294 mid-morning on Friday. And I had this itch. I just knew in my heart of hearts this deal was not going to go through. It was just way too high. I mean,
wasn't acting right out there.
This was not it. But we're talking about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And one of my traders at the time is trading in United Airlines. And he goes, these guys come in with this ticket and they sold like 400 puts of the 90 or 85 puts at like 11 o'clock in the morning with 4 hours to go. The stock's 294, so let's say they're $9 out of the money, and I think the price was like $30 or some. I mean, I don't even know what the implied volatility would have been in that, Russell, with like 4 hours to go, if the models could even calculate it, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the thing collapses. There's no deal, and I'm going to say those went to 150 or something. But 100 lot would have been what, $35,000. That would have, you know, would have been to going to $150,000, but how could you possibly pay $35,000 for something? As much as I was convinced this deal was not going to go through, I wasn't that convinced. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, how could you be that convinced? Yeah, here's $35,000 for plus the ticket was for more than 100 lot, but it ended up being, I think it ended up being like a $2 million ticket or something. Because they actually went to like 200 and whatever, but who could have ponied up the money for that? I mean, as much as you think this, like just what you just said yesterday, I went in there at his GameStop and I was going to buy some puts, and the puts are like $50.
Just like, yeah, nah,
and you can't sell the calls because that could hit you where the sun don't shine easy, right? Because who knows if the thing's liable to double again right now? But you're right. This is I don't think this is healthy, Russell. And I don't remember. But
no, it's not. And just the overall behavior and the silliness from day to day. And you know, instead of the E-Trade commercials with the old guy and the young guy, it's a lot of young people on Reddit or wherever spouting off about a stock. And I know you're not on social media as much as I am, but almost every day now I see people putting up on Twitter where somebody really young has put up a video about how they've totally figured out the stock market. I mean, like, you know, 18, 19 year old saying, well, I just buy the stock when I find the stock that's going up, I buy it, and then when it stops going up, I sell it. I actually saw somebody make a video about that yesterday.
Well, did you see that the Etsy's up 10% this morning because Elon Musk tweeted he liked it.
Sounds like a good strategy to me. Buy it, yeah, and then it goes up, sell it.
You buy it. Well, and I do say that you're better off. That, you know, I do teach my students at Loyola when we're talking about the stock market. I say buying high to sell higher is actually a more successful strategy than trying to buy low to sell high.
Oh, sure.
Trying to catch dips.
You're always early.
Catching the falling knife and all that other kind of stuff.
You're always early because you want the momentum.
Yeah.
Well, if you're a market maker,
and momentum's a proven factor, and what I've been, you know, in actually momentum's part of my dissertation, and I'm starting to think maybe that, you know, momentum works better. Well, I know momentum works better than in other time periods. I have a real funny feeling that momentum strategies are on individual stocks are just off the charts right now.
Well, if you're a trader like me, you have a really screwed up mentality when it comes to markets like this. For several reasons. One is, I'll do them in order, I guess. When I was in the OEX in 2000, okay, and all this stuff is happening, we were trading the S&P 100. And in our world, I mean, that was the lion's share of the equity in all the stocks in the world were in the S&P 100, right? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's got to be 80% of the 500 or maybe more, right?
So it's actually a little over 90.
Okay, so the OEX is, really was the market. And all these stocks that are going wild, the Yahoos of the world and Russell's talking about, they weren't even stocks in our index. And we're watching the CNBC. Okay, some stock could go up there that went from like 60 to 120 in like a week. Guys look at each other, who are these guys? What do they even do? We felt like we were not even in the same industry. And now I feel the same way. I mean, normally I have, I got a bazillion stocks up on my machine here that all my clients are in and stocks that I watch. And all of a sudden, one of the guys from, you know, places that I do, I consult with will call up and say, hey, you watching these five stocks? And I go, what five stocks?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not even ones that, I mean, my clients don't have them. I mean, I never heard of a place. I mean, obviously I've heard from, you know, about Best Buy and I've heard about, BlackBerry, but the other thing, Russell, is what it seems like whenever you have these stocks that come out somewhat quickly, you can't short them. So even the specialists can't short them. And it makes it very difficult to have an orderly option market. I mean, if you can't short.
And to take it down a quick notch for everybody that's like, why in the world, if you can't short it, does that screw up the option market? It's because the market makers can't properly hedge, or they can't figure out what the cost of their hedge is going to be. And if they can't figure that out, they're going to, you know, the bid-ask spread is going to be ridiculous.
Just to give a, how about a real quick?
If it goes too wide, I should be more specific.
How about if I give a quick shot at explaining this on both ends, and then you tell me if I'm wrong, Professor. If you, for instance, wanted to buy, I'll pick a number. If you want to buy 100 at the money calls, and I'll just throw a stock up off my screen, Procter & Gamble. Stock's 132.50. If you come in, and Russell and I are the market makers, and Matty Weber is the third guy, you want to buy 100 calls, the delta on that, the stock equivalency is 0.5, roughly. 0.51, 0.52, right, Russell? I'm right so far.
Yeah.
So if I sell you that 100 calls for the moment, I'm supposed to be making a market here. I'm not supposed to be taking the other side of whatever the rest of the world wants to do. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to sell you that 100 calls, or we'll at least sell you 50. I'm going to turn around. I'm going to buy 5,000 shares of stock. Okay, so what you do is you're trying to make a bullish move. You're buying the calls. And it translates into the stock by me selling you the calls and then going and buying the stock, so I'm hedged, at least for a little while. Because if it keeps going up, I can start buying more and more stock. Because I'm short 100 contracts and I only long 50 of the stock, okay? But turn that around. If you say, I want to insure the stock, it's trading 132. I think it might go lower. I want to keep my stock. I'm going to buy the 130 puts, buy 100 of those. I just can't sell the entire world insurance. Now, my hedge on that is to short the stock.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm short 5,000 shares, I now have hedged myself, and the next guy wants to come in and buy more puts, I can short my... So it's a way of keeping the market normal. Now, if all of a sudden I can't short the stock and five guys in a row come in and buy these puts, I'm going to say, okay, I don't know what's going on here, but the next guy's paying like $20. I don't care, right? That's your only...
Yeah,
it's your only
you end up having a... You're not jacking the price to try and rip somebody off. You're jacking the price to protect yourself.
Right. And once you make it more difficult to do that, which... Because, I mean, basically, I mean, if you had, how can I say this? A lot of traders really would love it if there was a bill in Congress that markets could only go up and nobody could ever sell, right? If we all keep our hands in the boat, we'll all be rich. Well, it doesn't, you know, it can't work that way. Because at some point, a stock might only be worth, and there's different valuations, might be worth between 50 and 75. And if it's trading 275, there's a problem, you would think, right? I mean, but momentum traders, they don't care. They just...
Yeah.
And what you were saying about the momentum is if you're a trader like me, you look at, say, Maddie's got a nice car. I won't say what kind it is. Let's say I'm 10,000 bid, and if I bought it at 10, at 12,000, I don't care. And if I bought it at 10 and somebody said, I'll give you 14, it'd be theirs. Right, that's the way most things are priced by most people. And you have a buy price, a price you don't care, and a price where you'd sell it. I mean, when I talk about wives and kids, we're talking about, you know, stuff. But the momentum trader says, hey, the thing went from 10 to 12 to 14. It's going to 18. Well, why? Because it is. And you know what? They're right a lot of the times, right? Right, Russell?
Yeah.
And without any idea of what the car is really worth or what you could get one, you know, I could go buy a Cadillac for less than that or whatever. It just, I'm saying, and right now it's momentum trading. And it's everybody looks and sees what's going up and they buy in there. And there are periods of time in the market where they do very, very well. And then there's periods of time when they don't. And when, the question is, when do you go from one period to the next? That's the problem.
And that's the hardest part to time. But what I was expecting you to end the story with was that the story never ends well.
No.
That really, when you were starting to go through your little bullet points, I was like, and the last thing he's going to say is that, you know, I recognize all this other stuff, and I also know that at the end, it's not good.
No.
And we end up with a headline grabbing day for a week or two.
Well, plus, you know, in your heart.
And I don't know when that's going to happen, but I know that I've got a lot of cash on the sidelines waiting for it.
Well, you also have the tax thing, which I never hear anybody else mention, and maybe I mention it too much. You know, yesterday in your heart of hearts, that some bump bought the GameStop at whatever, 160, and is still wearing it at 80. And if it's his first trade, and he's down 15 grand, it's going to take him 5 years to write that off because our tax laws are. Why don't we change that one, Russell? And why don't we change the one about giving your kids the stock and have them, they get the new basis and nobody ever pays taxes on it? Yet nobody in Congress, with all this stuff, Democrats, Republicans, that's why whenever I argue with both sides, my theme is always the same. When it comes to money, when it comes to them doing stuff for themselves and their constituents, the rich constituents that pay them the money, they're all the same. And the idea that one's different than the other, from the right or the left, I don't know. In some areas, they're all the same.
The tax break on the $3,000, you know, increasing that, I actually think, and I'm not saying that this is accurate, but I actually think that one would come across as benefiting rich folks.
It can't be.
I'm not saying that's accurate, but you know, I think in this day and age, we know that what's accurate and what's perceived are two very different things.
Well, you can spin it anyway.
If you're giving, you know, somebody that lost a bunch of money in the stock market the ability to get a tax break off that, in the mind of the average Joe, and a way that can be depicted by people trying to unseat other people in elected office, it can be shown. It can be said, see, they gave a tax break to their Wall Street buddy.
Well, the rich guy is more than likely to have a piece of property that he's up on that he can sell and match him up against. Where does the stick?
And then he doesn't pay his fair share on what he made off that property.
Right. So, but the other thing would be the piggy move up on the stock, as to why nobody pays, why you get a new basis. I don't get.
When you pass it on,
yeah.
Yeah, I understand getting a tax break if you donate, you know, shares to, if you donate a bunch of shares in McDonald's to Loyola so we can build a cool business school. I do understand that one.
Well,
because I feel like the money is being used for some sort of good. And when you go through charitable organizations, I actually trust them more than I trust the government to help out,
But it's the same
disadvantaged, do good with the money.
That's the same transaction, though, Russell. Because if you sold it and then had the capital gain, and then turned around and donated the money, then you can deduct the donation, so you get to the same place, right?
Yeah, I just think it's easier to just donate the shares.
Oh, sure. I would agree with that. And then
too early in the morning, and I'm too low into my coffee to do the math on that one.
At least you have.
But I feel like there's something not 100% correct in what you just said.
I'm not a tax guy. I just, there might be some.
No, you know, and here's what it is you would have the capital gain hit, which you'd still have to pay, The donation would offset some of your income, but probably not all of it. So I think you're just better off transferring the shares.
Probably.
And when you transfer the shares, I think you still get the you probably still get the charitable donation part, and you never had to pay any taxes on the capital gain part.
It would make it easier, but I don't know. Yeah. I don't know the number.
That's one thing right there. Is it just makes it easier? But I will bet if I went through the textbook that I had that talks about these sorts of things, that I would find why there was a hole in what you just said.
Well, the mechanism of making three transactions, there's got to be some stickiness someplace in there.
Yeah.
But the 3,000, I mean, the part that grabs me is I don't know what the number ought to be, Russell. I know it shouldn't be the same as when I entered the business and the Dow was 800.
No, God, no, absolutely not. No, that's a number that, you know, if anything, it should at least have been bumped up by, you know, CPI or something.
Well, I also, I mean, I'm convinced. Yeah,
so it's the same, you know, so it's in 1970, you know, it's 1970s, but it's in 2021 dollars.
Well, I also, in the early 2000s, when mm-hmm. when we started having our essentially surplus, the mm-hmm. Clinton surplus, I think a chunk of that was that people who made money on the dot-bomb stocks all owed, and the people who lost money didn't get the credit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, I mean, if you look at the...
I think that was a big help with it. You know, they also changed things around a little bit where we were issuing shorter-dated bonds instead of longer, more shorter-dated bonds.
Right.
So the interest cost to the government had gone down as well.
Well, I mean, here's what...
But I do think that the income tax, the coffers definitely benefited from, you know, a lot of people that made money in stocks that were surprised that they had a taxable event.
Well, let's talk about more after the break, because I think government does those kinds of things in a lot of times, unfortunately. SP Futures up 2, NASDAQ Futures down 12, quiet morning. Not so in the rest of the world, so we'll talk about that in a minute. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Yeah, wherever Russell Rhodes. You know what you two guys got me doing now? I'm thinking back to my days when I was a kid at the racetrack with my parents.
Back in the...
I got you thinking about 8-track tapes.
No, racetrack.
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 You know, the horses, the ponies, and they're off. You know, I can't believe... What's the post-music, Manny? S&P Futures up 250, NASDAQ Futures down 8, and you're going to be surprised. I'm going to tie this all together when we're done with this. Dow Futures up 64, they're going to say, how the hell is he going to do that? There you go. what a great sound. DAX up 264. That's almost 2%. FTSE up 57.8%. CAC around up 77, 1.5%. So, UBS profit surge is yet another bank doing well. I'm shocked and appalled. Shocked. Nikkei, over, get a load of this. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 276. That's 1%. Shanghai down 54. That's 1.5%. And the big winner, Hang Seng down 770. That's 2.5%. So, totally different world on the other side than Europe. Bonds. Actually, they're almost unchanged now. They were up a little bit before. I say the bonds. The 10-year yield, 1.043. The bond, minus 0.54. Japan, positive 0.03. Oil up 26 cents, 53.03. Brent up 26 cents, 56.14. Natural gas up 5 cents, 265. RBOB up 2 cents, 158. Gold is down 50 cents. Silver up 6 cents, so not much going on there. Copper down 2 cents. Maybe what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We still have snowy conditions throughout the area that's causing delays in some of the travel times. Earlier crashes on the Kennedy and also on the Dan Ryan are all clear now, so that's good news, but heavy volumes on all of our area expressways right now. Eden's looking okay as far as accidents are concerned. I mentioned the crash cleared on the Kennedy. Eisenhower's been crash-free all morning so far. Same for the Stevenson, but heavier than normal traffic volumes due to the snowy conditions. Southside expressways are looking okay. We do have a crash right now on I-80 westbound. That's at 96th Avenue, which is exit 145. It's a car versus a wall situation. We assume the wall won that one, but that's an issue on I-80 that has that slowed down on the westbound side. Also, out in the western suburbs, the Reagan Memorial, I-88 westbound at Kingery, still working on some emergency maintenance operations that has that exit ramp blocked onto Kingery from the Reagan, and that's causing delays if you're heading outbound on I-88 out in the western suburbs. That's it for the expressways. Off the expressways, we have a crash at North Avenue and Addison. And then just northwest of there, Lake Street at Swift Road in the western suburbs, there's a crash. And then way out west, Route 59 at Santa Fe Street, there is an accident. One other crash in the area, that's up in the northern burbs, Milwaukee Avenue at Illinois 60, which is Town Line Road, there is a crash. Weather today, it's not snowing right now, but we are expecting a second wave here as part of this winter weather advisory that's going to last until 5 p.m. tonight. Could see another 2 to 5 inches, especially the further north you are. So the city could get another inch or two, which would put us at about 5 inches total for the duration of the storm. Northern suburbs could see up to 5 more inches of snow, and they already got about 5 inches last night, so they could be more in the 8 to 10 inch range as this storm moves through the area today and then exits by 5 p.m. tonight. We'll reach a high of 33. Right now it's overcast and 30 degrees downtown. Not snowing currently, but more snow on the way.
For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 52 today. Right now it's overcast and 44. In sports, the Bulls were blown out by the Celtics 119-103. College hoops, Loyola beat Bradley for the second straight day, 65-58. The Ramblers had to rally back from that one. They trailed at halftime. Arizona beat Arizona State for the second time in a short period of time. I think they'd played just a week ago. They played again, this time in Tucson, and the Wildcats had no issue with the Sun Devils, 80-67. Chief.
The, so what I've, my racetrack analogy is that, this happens in a lot of your government. I guess it's my government too. Your government does this all the time. When you talk about, gambling, for instance, I mean, you know, Maddie loves to gamble, and I do too. But if you're Big Chief Jay Pritzker, you don't give a rat's behind about Maddie Weber or me enjoying gambling. What you know is the take is 10%, and oh, by the way, if you're going to get some percentage of the 10%, and as far as you know, everybody's a loser because at the end of the day, you're getting your 10%, right? And it gets worse than that. What is the mechanism, Maddie? Since I've never done it on an online game, what if you bet a parlay card and you bet something totally off the wall and you win like 10 grand? Do you have to declare that?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Now, here's my racetrack story.
There's a cutoff. I'd have to look up.
Yeah, there's always a cutoff.
Yeah, you do have to declare once you break that threshold.
Now, but you only have to pay taxes on your gambling profits minus losses. Right now, maybe if you're an online guy and you're willing to pony up everything you did, you have a track record to that, okay?
They track everything, yeah.
So you maybe could talk about it. But now, if you went to the racetrack, this is 50 years ago. The deal was, and my stepfather was not a dumb man, there was a cutoff there. If you made like more than $600, I think, on a ticket. So that's why if you saw somebody want to go bet $10 on a horse, they always bought $5 $2 tickets. So you go to five different collecting spots if you wanted to.
Just in case you hit one,
yeah.
You're not
so
going
to break
that threshold.
I said to him, hey, so what if you won a big daily double or trifecta? And he says, well, you can either keep a diary, like if you went to Vegas five times a year and one time you won Keno for $25,000, they're going to make you declare. Right? So your defense would be a diary that I've been in Vegas five times this year, and the other five times I lost $5,000 apiece, and by the way. But if you don't have a diary, if you don't have, records that I played blackjack for X number of hours and I lost, you know, $2,000 or something, you're basically bleep out of luck. Now, same way, but on the racetrack, you have, in the old days, people would take the losing tickets and they'd wing them on the ground. So if all of a sudden you did win a $10,000 trifecta, the first thing you would do is send a little guy like me, go pick me up $8,000 worth of tickets. But it gets you to the same place, doesn't it? Although now it's not as easy. I went to the track. I'm a big bettor. Look at all the stuff I bet on. I mean, buy every find every $100 ticket you see on the ground.
Yeah, now you're screwed. Because
now you're screwed.
If you use FanDuel or DraftKings or PointsBet or any of the big players in the legal gambling market now, sports betting market in Illinois, when you log in, you can... Within two clicks, you can see your entire history since you've downloaded the app, and it'll tell you what you're up, what you're down, your transaction history, et cetera. It's all logged.
That's what you absolutely don't want to see. If it's,
yeah.
But I mean, you look at what's happening, and I mean, not only, I don't know how we get off on this topic. Russell, you sent me off on this thing.
We're talking about taxes on capital gains.
Well, and we're talking about
how the tax man always gets his.
The disparity. Say if you go to a Southside place, Audrey and I go, and there's a couple of waitresses that virtually every day they make their $100 and they stop and make their contribution to the video poker games of $50, which I think is horrendous. But if one of these ladies actually one day won like $10,000, she's going to have to pay taxes on that. There's no way she's going to say, well, I lose $50 a day. Prove it. Now, if you have a diary, you might be able to have witnesses and say, I see her there over there every day. If you have a diary and you keep it there, I think that's good evidence. But all of a sudden, if you win, the state wins. If you lose, you lose. And they have, it's in stock taxes, it's in gambling, it's in a lot of places. And to not be aware of that is, you know, is not so bright, right? Right, Russell?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
so
no, it's just the way it's set up, and I don't think that's ever going to change because the government's always going to need to get theirs.
Well, the idea that
And those types of the things that you're talking about right there, those are very regressive taxes that end up really hitting the lower end of the curve.
Well, the idea yesterday
the lower end has gotten lucky, I guess, as far as the percentage of what they actually make.
Well, in my heart of hearts, I know yesterday there's some guy who made $100,000 in GME and some guy who lost $100,000 and doesn't have anything to match it up against, and he's screwed.
So that means that the government made, I don't know, 20, 25 grand off of GameStop yesterday?
Yes. And just those two people.
Yeah.
And you know what? That sucks.
And multiply that one out a bunch.
As they say in the South Side, that sucks.
Yeah. But that's unfortunate. That's the way the system is set up right now.
And why is it that you and I are the only persons talking about it? Only people.
Maybe everybody else has given up on trying to overturn it.
It could be.
Yeah, it just is what it is. I actually just taught a bunch of this stuff yesterday to my investments class. I also showed them how what's happening to their Robinhood order flow and how they're getting how they're getting the worst price, even though they have no commission. Yeah, I went through a lot of these things that you and I point out, and I try to bring them up in my classes, and they look at me like I have two heads, and like it really can't be that way. And like, yeah, no, that's actually the way the deck is stacked against you in certain ways. You need to be aware of that.
Let me ask you this, Russell, in our as we spend bazillions of dollars, that's a big number, on education in this country. Why would anybody ever think anything is free? I mean, well, you got to start with it. What kind of moron would think anything is free?
No, it's like if you can't figure out when you're doing something and it seems like it should cost some money, but it doesn't cost any money, that's when you should suddenly realize that you're actually not the customer, you're the product.
Right.
And with anybody that's selling their order flow off, you're actually, you being their customer, you think that you're the customer, but you're actually, what they're selling to somebody else.
Well, it's so, I've felt that my whole life. Plus, I don't think it was his statement, but he was famous for it. Milton Friedman, there is no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah.
But the thing that I don't, when email first, I was one of the last people, actually, this is how late this was. I went off the board of the CBOE in 1998, not one communication at board level was ever done by email. It had kind of just started, right?
And they were sending those paper memos?
Oh, well, I got delivered the big board packet.
Yeah. Somebody would bring it to you down on the pit. They'd probably bring it to you down on the floor.
Yeah. And so, I'm saying, so when I went to get my, I said, now it's a little later and everybody's got an email account, right? So I go, all right, I'm going to go online and I'm going to get myself an email account. So I went on, and I think it was I kick up whatever it was at the time, Yahoo or something, and I say, okay, email accounts, and one pops up, and Don't Got Mail was the name of the place, and they they said we'd do all this stuff for you, and by the way, it's $20 a year. So I go, okay, and I send them the $20. I got an email account. It never dawned on me that everybody else. I'm going to say this: everybody else would be so dumb. I mean, collectively, not individually, and I do it now too, so I'm one of the group, would say, no, I want this for free, because I immediately would say, well, it isn't free. I mean, these guys have to do something. They have to maintain the site. What do they get out of it? Now, here it is, 20-some years later, and they get out of it. They get to read all my crap. They get to send me advertisements. I would much rather pay the $20 and have my old system back. Much rather.
And be left alone.
Yeah, and be left alone. Yeah. And yet, nobody even think of that. Oh, no, it's free. They're willing to accept every manner of beating around the head and shoulders just because they can say it's free. I mean, same way with payment for order flow. If you were trying to do it to a class, and I've done this at seminars, my job used to be, and, to a certain extent still is, I mean, for us, we always treat it that way, my job used to be to take your order find the best price, pay somebody to make sure I got the best price, go to the trading floor, do it at the specialist book or in the crowd, and my job was to get you that price and I charge you X. Okay. Well, now it's free. But by the way, how do you handle that order? I go to the place that pays me the most to sell your order flow to somebody who can trade against it. Oh, that's cool. But it's free, isn't it? Well, it's not exactly free the way I just explained it. Yeah, but I don't have to pay anything, so it's free. Really? I mean, are you a fourth grader? What are you? I mean, but yet people believe that. As long as it's free, if it's free, it's for me, as they used to say in the trading floor. What can
there just really is no such thing as, free. And somebody's getting there somewhere. And you just always got to pay attention to what are the incentives for these people to, build out the technology to give you a free, with little air quotes, email account or free trades or anything else. Somebody's getting theirs.
But why wouldn't somebody, you go back to the email, why wouldn't somebody be willing to pay? Now, that was 20 years ago, so say it's $50 a year now. Why wouldn't somebody be willing to pay $50 for an email address where that's all they do? I mean, instead of all the other crap they need to get out of you to make it worth it for them.
Mm-hmm. There are people that do that. I mean, company email accounts are definitely set up like that. So that, they're internalizing everything and they've got to pay for that. And, I don't know if I would, I don't really, the ad stuff doesn't really bother me that much. I get car ads, I get ads for fountain pens, and I get ads for sweater vests and cardigans all the time. Because that's all I'm ever searching for.
Well, it bothers me when
they're steering me in the right direction for the most part.
Well, it bothers me when it jumps from one to the other. If I have my regular email and I'm looking for used pickup trucks, and it just hasn't happened lately because we got a new server on the PTI side. The server we have to use is somebody that's approved by FINRA, so we can never tank an email. Not that we would anyway, but for a while. It would jump from one to the other. If you were looking for a used car in my Google account, it would hop to my PTI Securities account, and I thought that was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because how did it get from one to the other? I can certainly see that the next time I kick up Google, that there's an ad for a used truck in there. That, I guess I'm willing to roll with that, but I don't want to jump into another email, do you?
No.
I mean, if you're looking for underwear in the Russell account, the last thing you need is it to pop up on your Loyola account saying, here's an underwear ad.
Yeah, no, that doesn't happen.
It used to.
And the
it used to.
Work stuff is completely separate. I'll tell you, the thing that is disconcerting to me is, we've got, like a lot of people, we have the Alexas lurking around the Rhodes household. And
they're listening to everything
I'll
you say.
I'll say something to one of my daughters, like, you're almost 16. What do you think about getting a Jeep Wrangler? And then all of a sudden I'm getting ads for Jeep Wranglers.
As to why you don't take a tour into that thing, I have no idea.
Yeah. So I don't, you were talking before I actually came on and I was listening to you, you were talking about how you just kind of, you're nice and you go along with everything and eventually you're not going to be nice anymore. If you lived in my house, you wouldn't even think that there's going to be a point that you're not going to be nice anymore. It's me and five women, man. I'm lucky to have my 20 square feet.
So if
they want a Lexus, they get a Lexus. They want a Peloton, they get a Peloton. So, I'm just always going to be nice.
And the checkbook's open. It's okay. I mean,
yep.
It works. I mean, once in a while, I got to believe you do say no because I know your personality. But
that was my 2021 New Year's resolution, and I'm still.
You're still waiting for
the
first?
I said no once back on the third.
You're practicing on the dog? No, you can't have your fifth biscuit in the last 5 seconds?
That's right. No, I'm not putting you back outside. The dog, one of my dogs is so damn dumb. She wants to go outside every 5 minutes. She takes two steps out. She's like, man, it's cold, and comes right back in. Does she think it changed?
What kind of dog is it?
It's my beagle.
My man Scruff used to do the same thing. He'd sit next to me and he'd jab me. He'd jab you with his foot, like every 30 seconds, you'd little jab. Because he wanted to go out. He'd open the door and there'd be like some hellacious rainstorm. And he'd look out, he'd look at me and he'd say, nah. Like 20 minutes later, Scruff, do you think it's changed? Then we go out the front door, and he looks at me again like, it's still doing it. it's not going to stop because you wanted it to, you dope. but eventually, we would have to go out, and, I'd be the guy he's pissed at me. Look, I'm all wet now. You must have done this. But anyway, hey, now here's the million-dollar question. I've been leading you into it, reeling you in.
I've been duped.
You've been duped. You and I have seen, I don't think you were old enough to remember the first turn when, in 1982 in August, and all of a sudden we went from interest rates at 15 and the market at 800, and we just said, okay, today we're going the other way. And to this day, I have no idea why it happened on, I think it was a Wednesday, why it didn't happen on Tuesday or Friday or the week before or the week after. Now, we both are noticing 2000-style stuff here, where stocks are flying around, and the most that stocks that you can't even value are the ones flying around the most, because it seems like new traders are trading those, and the old traders, like me and my clients and you, are trading this other stuff, which it really isn't sort of happening to, not as much anyway, and it's happening. Now, we both sense that there's an end to this. How do you know?
There is going to be an end to this.
And how do you know the day?
We don't. That's the thing. And this is not a shameless plug. I swear to God, it's not. But the last book I wrote on VIX, the last two chapters are on nothing but all the different financial disasters we've had. And, you know, I talk about how VIX was behaving leading up to them and how it acted afterwards and gave us an idea that we were in the all clear. But as hard as I tried, I could not find, you know, a real commonality there. I could find things that kind of gave us an indication that the derivative market was a little bit more concerned than everybody else, and it was acting like that before we got whatever event hit the market, because anything that hits the market, it always seems like there are some people that know what's coming and prepping themselves.
In 2000, you know, well, I'll go back to 1987, your price of insurance would have been the VIX if there would have been one, were at really all-time lows. And the same thing happened in 2007. Same thing sort of happened in 2000, a little different because we had the Y2K fears that kind of fed along there.
There was a little, when I run long-term, you know, analysis and stuff, that time period we always seem to have an elevated VIX for no particular reason.
Well, that was the reason.
And yeah, it was the irrational, the whole, you know, all the computers are going to turn themselves off.
Let me help you. Let me help you, my friend. As a guy who was on the board, not that that made any difference, but I was on one of these, I was on a computer committee. Can you imagine that? Talk about the Luddite.
Oh my. Well, no, but you're going to ask the questions that other people aren't going to ask.
No, you know what happened? You ever see like F Troop where they, on the board they asked for like a, volunteer and everybody stepped back, but I didn't step back quick enough. That's how I got that spot. Anyway.
What, huh?
Yeah. Looks like this man volunteered. Anyway, so, but the stuff that they used to tell you, I mean, it was, I'll take a minute here because it was so fascinating. Even a place like the SIBO had, at some point, and you know this better than me, they had the phone capability of the SIBO floor was what? A city with 300,000 people in it? Something like that. Yeah. Some massive number. And, Manny, the amount of phones and the amount of lines, I mean, there'd be people in a booth, there'd be 20 people in there, there'd be 40 lines, 50 lines. It was unbelievable. And every single one of those phones, the handsets or whatever, had chips in them. And what happens with a chip in a phone, again, I'm off the reservation of my own, is you might have an Intel chip for a computer that all of a sudden, you know, doesn't pass muster. Okay, they don't throw it out. It's perfect for like a phone because you use it for like one tenth its capacity. So you don't even know where all the stuff you bought, the chips in there, came from. And I'm going to say, this is probably more a Matty question, in the old code, back before, you know, in the 80s and 90s when they were running this stuff, the date came into the code like, what, every fifth line on average or something? Some incredible thing you would never believe. That, or maybe every tenth line. So the amount of dates that were in there, so the idea of when you flip to the 2000, which there was no zero in any of the code that was written in the 70s and 80s, people were absolutely horrified of what could happen anywhere along the chain. So it wasn't a irrational fear, Russell, I don't think.
There was, you know, implied volatility discounts uncertainty, and there was definitely more uncertainty when the ball dropped between 99 and 2000 than any other time.
Right.
As far as that one outlier. And it's probably a good thing that we got overly concerned about it, because if we had just ignored it, it might not have gone as smoothly as it actually ended up going.
Well, in the last week or two, I'm sure you've noticed, and probably have it charted, we only have 30 seconds, implied volatility is actually dropping. Does that make things, over the entire market, the VIX, does that make things more more liable to be a problem or less, based on your research?
It basically is going to, the fact that VIX is coming off, I think the reason VIX is coming off is because the S&P is kind of stalling out, and you're not having people buy puts right now in the S&P 500 because they're kind of set with their hedges already. But if the market keeps going up, they kind of have to roll up their hedges or buy higher strike put options, which is what I think has been keeping the VIX up for some time now.
All right, bud. We'll talk to you next week at your regular date. Enjoy yourself, shoveling snow, and see you next week. SP Futures up 6.25 now. NASDAQ Futures up only 50 cents. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.